And welcome to The Librarian on Authors on the Air. I am the host, Tabitha Pope. This is a copyrighted and trademarked podcast owned solely by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, LLC, on the web at authorsontheair.com. Tonight I have entangled author A.J. Pine. Let me get back to my page. Okay. A.J. Pine writes stories to break readers' hearts, but don't worry. She'll mend them with a happily ever after. As an English teacher and a librarian, A.J. has always surrounded herself with books. All her favorites have one big commonality, romance. Naturally, the books she writes have the same. When she's not writing, she is, of course, reading. Then there's the online shopping, everything from groceries to shoes, and a tiny bit of TV where she nourishes her undying love of vampires, superheroes, and a certain high-functioning sociopath detective. You also find her hanging out with her family in the Chicago burbs. For more information about AJ, you can visit her website, ajpine.com. And I heard live on this. Forgot to hit the button already. Oh, welcome to the show, AJ.
Hi. Thanks for having me, Tabitha.
So glad you could get on. So tell me real quick about, I'm reading your bio, and you know, I was reading it when I talked to you earlier, and I guess it didn't like click on me. Who's the high functioning sociopath detective?
I'm behind on my Sherlock watching too right now, so no spoilers if you watch it. I've only watched the first episode, so I've got two more to get under my belt. But yes, I am diehard Sherlock fan.
Now, have you like all things Sherlock Holmes, or is it just this?
No, more like all things Benedict Cumberbatch.
No. Oh, there you go.
So, yeah.
So you were a Doctor Who fan and then moved on through the ranks. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes total sense. And it's funny that it's such a large race. So, do you like fantasy and mystery mixed together?
I do. Like, it's really funny though. So I write contemporary romance, but a lot of my reading. I'm a high school librarian, a former high school English teacher, so I have a huge, huge love of YA as well.
Uh-huh.
And it's funny because a lot of my YA reading tends toward fantasy. So as long as there's a romance aspect, I'm reading everything. But I do, I love fantasy, and I love when there's a little bit of mystery to the fantasy as well.
So are you currently a librarian at a high school? Is that what?
I am, yes.
Oh, wow. Super fun job.
It is. Yeah, books every day. And there's a lot of it that has to do with, you know, teaching research assignments and all that stuff, and it's all part of the job. But the best thing is the students who just sort of congregate at my desk and talk about books every day. I love it.
I know. I mean, this is just no better place than feeling like you know, those kids sometimes feel like they're marginalized a little bit. I don't think it's so much now as it used to be back when I was in high school. But and now it's like they have a home to go to, because YA has become so prevalent in the industry. And it's just.
Yeah, no, there wasn't anything
congregating
like it.
Around like that. And then, you know, just talk books with them. Because
oh no. Hi, this is Amy. Leave me a message and I'll call you back. Bye.
At the tone, please record your message. When you have finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options. We did not get your message either because you were not speaking or because of a bad connection. To disconnect, press 1. To record your message, press 2. Are you still there? To disconnect, press 1. To record your message, press 2. Still there? To disconnect, press 1. To record your message, press 2. Sorry you are having trouble. Please try again later. Goodbye.
Sorry, but your call cannot be completed. Sorry, but your call cannot be completed. Sorry, but your call cannot be completed. Sorry, but your call cannot. Sorry, but your call cannot be completed.
Hello?
Well, that time it worked.
Sorry
about
lost.
That.
It's
I could
okay.
not get it back either. It was like, okay, what's going on here? And then I called in on my cell phone. I don't know what dropped, but anyway, welcome back.
Thanks.
See, and that's why I told you right before the show started.
I know.
I dropped you.
Oh,
so we
technology.
Lost. Yeah, isn't it fun? And who knows? I don't know. It could be my internet, but I called in on my cell phone, so guess what? It won't happen again. Hi.
Okay,
how are you?
I'm good, thanks.
So we were talking about the evolution of the young adult literature and how, you know, when we were kids, there just wasn't that type of thing around.
No, not at all.
I remember reading, and I didn't get anything from the library. I remember getting Sweet Valley Highs at the grocery store, which was probably the only thing that I got to read. And then I read maybe some of the little Harlequins my mom had laying around and type of thing. But there was none of this realistic young adult fiction. And the fantasy back then was written for adults, so it was very deep and
right. Like after like the C.S. Lewis books, like the Narnia books and,
mm-hmm.
you know, like A Wrinkle in Time, that it pretty
right.
much cut off there. There wasn't anything for a little bit older than that. So
no, you
I
had to go
reading,
all the way to Tolkien.
Yeah. I mean, when I was in high school, I was reading then I was, you know, like you were snatching your mom's, you know, Harlequins. I was reading my mom's Danielle Steele books.
Yeah.
You know, I went right from, you know, like Sweet Valley High to Danielle Steele to then like John
yeah.
Grisham, you know.
Right, exactly. That was college. You started John Grisham right away. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
there was nothing. And so, yeah, I totally agree with you. And that's why it makes being a high school librarian is so different than when, you know, when we were in high school, because there's so much more to it. You know, there's actual the love of reading again.
There really is.
And, you know, my poor daughter reading the Odyssey this week, I'm like, I wish they just, you know, I know it's important to learn some of these things, but good God.
there is, like, you know, there's really, really the, and this is, I'm going to totally, like, have all my English teacher friends hate me here, but, you know, one of the, because I taught at high school English for 13 years, and I loved it, but the thing about the classics is, you know, really, aside from understanding the world at those times and, you know, yada, 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 I'll put that out there, that it's important, you know, the classics are really important to know so that you can join in on conversation when people bring up the classics, you know, that it comes and there's so much, you know, even, gosh, I'm going to date myself here, but I used to always show episodes of The Simpsons when I was teaching stuff like Hamlet.
Right.
And, you know, because pop culture reincarnates the classics.
Absolutely.
And so that's why I think it's important. You know, 10 Things I Hate About You, one of my favorite movies in the world, is, you know, The Taming of the Shrew. So
right.
You know, there's at least that connection there that, like, if you do read the classics, you'll understand pop culture a little bit better.
Yeah. But I do, and this has always been an argument for me. Pride and Prejudice is still one of my favorites. But I guarantee
yes.
in high school when I read it, I was like, this is the most boring shite that I have ever read, and I don't care. Because I had no worldly knowledge that to tie it to, you know. I couldn't understand class struggles because I was 14 and I didn't care. And I hadn't had those romantic, deep romantic feelings about anybody yet. And, you know, I hadn't even learned world history. So I didn't even know that why were these people poor and these people weren't, you know. And so
right.
When I read it again in college, it was like, oh, my God, the language is so beautiful. And I understood everything and it all made sense. So sometimes, yes, and sometimes maybe not so much, but.
Yes.
Yeah,
oh, no, I agree. I taught that book when I taught AP literature for seniors, and I would read parts of it aloud, and I would have to stop and say, you guys, you need to laugh. That was really funny what I just read.
Yeah, they don't understand. Yeah. Yeah, I remember exactly that. I mean, I was like, okay, and now I appreciate the arguments, you know, the arguments that they would have, and the bitter. Oh, gosh, you know, they were almost, they were insulting each other without really insulting each other, you know, in these fly ways, these word wonderful ways. And it was, now it's like, oh, masterful. I love it. It's wonderful. But then I was like, what is all this language? Just talking. They just talk too much, you know?
Yeah, you don't appreciate it. You don't appreciate it when you're a teenager.
Yeah. So, anyway, so, enough about that, and you know, I was a young adult librarian at the public library, so I totally feel your pain on that one. And I read enough depressing contemporary young adult fiction to, it, you know, not to say that it doesn't have a place in the world. I totally agree that it does, but that's where I started turning to my HEA because I need Happily Ever After. Please give me that cheesy crap. I want it. I want more of it, you know, because there was a lot. There is a lot of young adult literature that's just not literature, but young adult contemporary books that don't end very nice as of late. And, I started wanting more romance. So
yes, I think I think there's something to be said for being able to, you know, close a book and not be able to stop smiling for a little bit afterwards. I'm all for I'm all for a really good ugly cry every now and then.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
But
oh, yeah.
it can't be the norm.
And it doesn't always have to be at the end. I mean, please don't do that, people. You know, do it in the middle where you can recover and still be happy at the end.
Right.
And it's funny because I put on my Facebook this week that we were watching, my husband and I are watching season 2 of Outlander. I've already read the books, but you know, he's watching them with me and got to, you know, one of the ones with just a horrible, ugly cry in the middle of the season. And I'm like, oh, you know, I'm pathetic because I knew it was coming and I'm still over here ugly crying like crazy. but yeah, at least I know, you know, I know. But it's just, ugly crying.
It's still
great.
A hit you. It's right.
Ugly cries are great. Except when you're miserable and you go to bed still, you know, shaking from sobbing so hard in the middle of a stupid show. But... So what made you, I mean, obviously you've been a big reader. What made you decide you wanted to write? Were you a writer, growing up, or was it something?
I wasn't. I always feel like really guilty saying that. Like, I feel like I feel like there's something like I always knew that I wanted to write, and I really didn't. I really did not fall in love with books in any way, shape, or form until college. High school, I did well in high school, but I was not a high-achieving kid in English class. I read because I had to read and, you know, all that fun stuff. And it took an intro to fiction class in college where one of the assignments in the class, and I ended up using this when I went back, when I became a teacher and went to the classroom, one of the assignments in the class was to write it was a small class and we were writing a progressive novel, meaning like one person, like there was a contest and it came down to three people that we voted, and one person won who came up with the idea of a starting chapter of a book. And then it got passed on. It got passed on each week to a new student in the class until at the end of the class we had written this, like, totally weird, wacky story together. And, you know, that showed me that, that writing could be something that was fun, that it didn't have to be something for a grade per se. And that was really the first time that I did anything creative. But then it wasn't until a lot of years later, once I was into my teaching career and the school that I worked at was really, really big on promoting writing with the students, with the faculty. They had this wonderful writing fest every year, and it was really being a part of a community like that where writing was celebrated that made me think, maybe I want to give this a try. And that's when I started. So yeah, it wasn't until I was well into my career as a teacher that I started writing.
And once you started writing, what made you take that big step to, you know, say, I'm going to try to get this published or maybe this could be a book?
Well, the very first book that I wrote was a young adult dystopian novel. And I queried that book to agents. And in my query letter, I wrote that if you like The Hunger Games, you're going to love this book. And they were like, we have The Hunger Games. We don't need your book. It was fun. It was a really good lesson in, you know, in growing a thicker skin and rejection and all that fun stuff. And it took a long time for me to share that I was even writing to my friends, my colleagues, my family. And then once I let people start reading what I was doing and I was getting, you know, positive feedback along with some criticism, that I was like, all right, maybe I can try this again. And then I ended up going a totally different way into romance because I read my very first young adult contemporary romance, which was Stephanie Perkins' Anna and the French Kiss, which is still to this day one of my absolute favorites. One of my absolute favorites. And that was because I hadn't read, you know, since I'd read like my mom's old books when I was in high school and college, I hadn't read like anything truly romantic that didn't have some other aspect, you know, like dystopia or fantasy or whatever. I hadn't read anything that was just about the romance in such a long time. And I was like, wow, there can be a really great story just centered around these two people finding each other. Yeah. And so that's really what got me into, okay, I'm going to go this other angle here. And then I wrote my first romance.
Awesome.
Without the dystopian world ending. You know?
What made you go slant towards the adult versus YA?
So the first few books that I wrote and published were new adults. And that was, you know, that was a couple of years ago when new adult was, you know, on the rise, and I really liked the idea of this college romance aspect that I really hadn't read too much of and that there was still sort of a gap in the market for. And so I had this idea. My very first book is about a girl who her junior year of college studies abroad in Scotland, and I may or may not have studied abroad in Scotland my junior year. I may or may not have dated one guy and had a crush on another, which happens in the book as well. But in the real life version, the guy that I had the crush on, nothing ever came of it. So I was like, it would be really fun to rewrite history and have it work out the way that it was supposed to work out in 1995, you know?
Yeah,
and
that,
so that
that's
became
fun when
my
you
first
can live
book.
Vicariously through the book, though. That's cool.
Exactly. Live vicariously through fictional me. Right.
Okay, so that was your first one. That's great.
That was my very first book, yeah. And so that was really fun to write. It was really a big learning experience for me as well because the book that I wrote before that was more focused on the world building and the dystopia and all of that fun stuff. That it really I learned a lot about the story arcs of a romance writing that book. And I think I learned a little bit more with each one. But yeah, that was book number one, and it was a lot of fun. I realized that I really liked writing about kissing and the other things that come after kissing.
Yeah, and you can't really write about the other things when you go YA. So
no,
you
can't.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny because, you know, there are a lot of romance writers that do write, you know, young adult romance, and then they write adult romance. And it, you know, it's always like, well, it's, you know, there's a certain freedom that comes from writing adult because you don't have to fit, you know, you don't have to follow these rules, these things you cannot do if you want your book to sell YA. And then,
right.
But then there's, you know, there's a certain voice that gives you more freedom in YA. You know, you don't have to follow the rules of adulthood over here when you're writing YA. So
exactly.
There's, you know, there's pros and cons of both. It just depends on what hat you've got on and whether you can, you know, remember who's, remember
right.
whether to close the door or not, right?
Exactly. Which, although, you know, I'm being more and more surprised by the YA that I read and the more doors that are opening, I guess, in you know, romance and YA. And I like that, you know, there's nothing that I've read that's, you know, too graphic or anything like that, but mm-hmm. I like the fact that there are some stories that are pushing the boundary a little bit in YA romance.
Well, right. And, you know, I mean, honestly, they gotta be realistic. Kids aren't as dumb as you think they are anymore. So,
right.
You know, but I do remember being a public librarian in a very conservative library system or area, you know, and picking up a book and going, well, that one's going to get, you know, we're going to get all kinds of crap on that one. You know, I'd make a pile. Let's write a list here. Figure out which ones we want to, you know, try to fight for or not, because sometimes they were just things that you just couldn't even say, yeah, sure, okay. You know, I mean, you know, there were certain topics that you can't, you can't fight for in a conservative
right.
county
no,
or
I totally
whatever,
get
you know?
That.
Like,
yes,
like
totally,
if just,
yeah.
If it goes into
it's
detail about oral sex, it ain't going to happen.
It's a tough situation, and it can be,
yeah.
And it can be, you know, like one page in a book, in a really wonderful book, and it gets pulled out of context
yeah.
by a community member who's upset about it, and it's
yeah.
it's too bad that happens.
Yeah,
it really
it
is.
Is. And it really, we always had, and I don't know if this, I mean, I know that the schools around our area had the same issues, but we always had the one or two parents who, yes, their children maybe were way more sheltered than the other ones, and that's their, you know, up to them. But, you know, they want to complain about a book that the rest of the kids, it doesn't even faze them. And then it's, well, you're the parent, you need to screen the books, you know. I mean, we make them available, but you're the parent, screen them. You know, and then they get all, oh, my gosh.
Right, it's a choice. It's a choice. Like, something is on the shelf doesn't mean that you have to read it. You know, it's there for... It's there for your choosing, and that's what I think is the toughest part about it. Is I'm a very big advocate for putting everything out there to represent everyone, and you know everything
right.
that's gonna help a reader see themselves hopefully in a book.
Right, and in the library they don't have to you know hide it so much. They just walk up, check out the book, and leave, and nobody has to have a conversation about it. Or reveal anything, or you know what, and they can maybe find some kind of piece or identify with a character or something. You know, I know that books are therapeutic for me, so I know that it's got to be helpful for those teens who are in those years of turmoil and, you know, crazy hormones and everything else going on. So, yeah, I agree too. It was hard working for such a wishy-washy type of, you know, they didn't want to fight for anything. They just didn't.
Right.
That's
tough.
It was
that is
bad.
Tough.
Yeah, and school districts, you know, the money comes from taxpayers. I can see how hard that's got to be, too. So everybody fight the good fight, because I agree. I agree with that. So anyway, do your students all know that you write romance, adult romance?
Yeah. But, you know, it's funny when I was writing that YA dystopian book, I had let my students know about it because I literally finished the very last word of that very first book at 1 a.m. on November 1st of 2011, and
oh,
that was so that morning at work I was telling my students about NaNoWriMo. And,
uh-huh.
you know, do you guys know about National Novel Writing Month and all this fun stuff? And they were like, you know, really interested. I said, but I'm not going to participate because I just finished writing a book last night or really early this morning. And they're like, you did what? Because I never told anybody I was writing. And I had a classroom library because I was a big advocate of, you know, choice reading even back then. I had a classroom library, and I gave my students 10 minutes of independent reading every morning or every start of the class period. And as soon as I told them I wrote this book, they're like, well, Mrs. Pine, we are going to we're going to give up our 10 minutes of reading and you're going to read us your book every day. I'm like, no, I'm not. They're, yes, actually you are. And I did. I read them my entire book, and that was my first experience with reading my own work aloud, with getting critical feedback from my intended audience, you know, and stuff like that. So, but what was really funny is in that book, so that was, you know, YA dystopian, like the most graphic scene in there as far as romance was a kiss, like one kiss. And it was, and I was just totally mortified to read it in front of them, which is so funny. And literally, like, I got to that scene, and the day that it happened, I said, okay, you guys, I'm going to give you like a freebie here. If you don't want to hear me read this, you can step out into the hall. and they all stayed, and I read it, and I'm sure I blushed wildly. And I got through it, and then I wrote the book, and then I wrote the NA book that got published, and they're like, are you going to read us that one? I said, absolutely not. from here on out, Mrs. Pine does not read aloud.
Well, that's cool, and that's good that they knew. That's really encouraging.
They're encouraging. They're supportive. Yeah, but I definitely don't. I don't have my books on my shelf, and you know, in the high school library or anything like that. No,
but that's cool though. And how neat, like a really neat experience. You just written your book and you got to share it with your intended audience. And you can't have more direct feedback than, you know, reading it straight to the people who would be buying your book. So
it was really funny. They would stop me and they would say, okay, Mrs. Pine, especially like the boys, Mrs. Pine, this is not how a boy would talk. Like, he has to say this. And I would, you know, scribble it right in, right when they were saying it. They heard the roughest of the rough draft. So that was definitely an experience.
Man, you ought to hire them out. That's all.
Right?
So tell us a little bit about your Kingston Ale series, Kingston Ale House series, and where your idea for the, the basis, the art, overarch, came up.
So I have this theory that I and this is also gonna, you know, show everybody how old I am, but I have this theory that almost everything can relate back to the TV show Friends far as, you know, my interests in life. What I always loved about Friends, that I have a great group of friends, and I have friends that I've been friends with since high school. I have friends that I met in college and have stayed close with, but I never had like a core group like that of guys and girls who, no matter what, they started their day together, they ended their day together, and they had this sort of central hangout, which is Central Perk, the coffee shop. And I really wanted to create a sort of ensemble cast like that. And so I started thinking back to, you know, my 20s in Chicago and, you know, going to the bars and stuff like that when I was young and single. And there was no such thing as microbreweries when I was in my 20s. Good Lord, I'm dating myself here. Seriously,
so
I'm not that old.
So you're in good company.
Right, I'm not that old. But, you know, so I'm like, I'm gonna make a Central Perk, but it's going to be with beer instead. We're going to make a microbrewery. And so that's basically what I did, is I created this cast that the brewery was always the backdrop. Mm-hmm. Chicago was the backdrop, and I could, like, weave in my favorite things about Chicago into, you know, certain aspects of the story. Mm-hmm. And it was just this group of people that have known each other. Like, some of them grew up together. Some of them have known each other since high school. Some of them were siblings, you know, kind of like we had the Ross and Rachel. There was, mm-hmm. you know, Annie and Jeremy are brother and sister, and they both each have their own book in the series. You know, Bryn and Holly were sisters, and they each have their own book in the series. And it was just, I got to bring my, you know, my favorite people back in each book and catch up with them. And it was just a really fun thing to do, to sort of create my own, you know, friends. and that's kind of where it was born, is I wanted all these people that I was always going to come back to them, and they were always going to be there for each other. Not, you know, let the Friends, like, theme song start playing right now.
Yeah, right.
Thank you from the Rembrandts. I'll be there for you.
Yeah, right. So each book stands alone, but they're all tied together.
Yeah,
in
absolutely.
This main,
Yeah, you don't have to read one to read another. Each story will bring back characters from the story before, and so there will be tiny spoilers, obviously, because you know characters from the stories before will be together in their relationships and stuff. But
mm-hmm.
you know, spoiler alert: these are four romances. They all have a happily ever after. They're gonna get together in the end.
Exactly.
You just have to like it enough to stay with it and find out how that HEA happens. But
yeah.
But yeah, no, absolutely. Each one is a standalone.
Very cool. And this is number four.
This is book four, the fourth and final book in the series. Yes.
So you're done with them for now.
Yeah. And this book was actually a big surprise to me. I had, when I first sold the series to my editor at Entangled, I had the first book written and then I had basically the back cover copy for the other three books. And
mm-hmm.
book four, I honestly couldn't even tell you what book four was supposed to be because this was over a year ago now. but as I started, books one, two, and three turned out to be exactly what I said they would be. But as
mm-hmm.
I was writing book two, and this character Jeremy, who was in book one, is this little tiny side character, and then he showed up again in book two, and he was really funny. And I started thinking to myself, what is this guy's story? and he was a side character. He was the brother of the sister of the best friend in book one, to give you the connection there. But he just kept showing up, and he was really funny. So it was pretty much when I think I finished book two that I emailed my editor, and I said, okay, so Jeremy will not leave me alone. He needs his own book, and here's what I think I want to do for him. And I gave her just a really short three-paragraph premise for book four, and she's like, yes, that's what it has to be. And so so he ended up getting his own book, and he was never supposed to, but he just wouldn't leave me alone.
It was originally just going to be a three-book thing then.
It was still a four-book thing, but the fourth book had a different premise, and honestly cannot – I don't even remember what it was supposed to be. That's how much he sort of overshadowed everything that was happening is he was like, nope, you are so not doing what you thought you were going to do. You're doing my book.
I love it when a side character becomes, you know, just so they speak to you as you know, like when you reading a series or even watching a show, you know, that
yeah.
side character is like, man, they're so funny or they're so awesome. We need to know more about them, you know. And did your fans probably said the same thing? They were probably like, this guy, what is up with this guy? He needs his own book.
I was really, you know, once I knew I was writing his book as book four, when I was writing book three, I started hinting at his backstory a little bit. And I really liked when book three came out, which was actually his sister's book. When book three came out and reviews started coming out and people were saying, man, I hope Jeremy's book is next. I was so excited to see that because Jeremy's book was next. So it looks like I made the right decision.
Very cool. So tell us a little bit about Jeremy's book.
So, just to give you a little bit of backstory of Jeremy, Jeremy Denning, who is the hero in book four in Worth the Wait, we don't really know much until we get a little bit into the book, but this is sort of hinted at throughout the series that he's been burned by love before. And he decided once that happened once that I am not going there ever again. And he turned into a little bit of a player. And as I started seeing this player side of him come out in books one, two, and three, I thought, what would be the biggest challenge to give a guy who has sworn off commitment and who really just enjoys, you know, the physical aspect of a relationship? And so I threw at him the heroine, Grace, who is on a six-month sex cleanse. She has sworn off, and it's not just a sex cleanse, it's a full body cleanse. So it's clean eating, no alcohol, and no man parts. And then I kept making them bump into each other, and it was, you know, it was fate saying, nope, you guys are not going to just meet and walk away. Nope, guess what? You're going to see each other again. nope, guess what? You're going to be friends now. And then it just kind of happened from there. And so, yeah, so basically it is these two people who have an instant attraction, not instant love, because they do the friendship thing first. It is a slow burn, this instant attraction to each other, and decide to just be friends and see what that's like. And, you know, obviously want a lot more from each other physically, but she is holding fast to this cleanse, especially when it turns into a reality show of sorts where she can win a whole lot of money if she holds out and kisses her Mr. Right on the last day of the cleanse on the local television news station.
Oh
so yeah, it's pretty, like, if you want to talk like over the top sort of, you know, craziness, I really went there with this book, and it was a lot of fun. Two meddling exes on both sides there, and getting creative with wanting to keep my readers interested, because this is a sexier series. So wanting to keep my readers interested, even though the payoff as far as what will happen when the cleanse is over does not happen until much
yeah.
later in the book. And so, yes, Jeremy and Grace do get quite creative with telephone conversations.
Oh, that's hilarious. When you said that cleanse, I had a three-year cleanse once.
was that voluntary?
Oh, yeah. I was like, I am so done. I happened to be pregnant at the time, but
right.
I was so done after that. I'm like, I got 2 years after this kid's born. I'm not even talking to another man. So, yeah. Anyway, it worked, but I got a good husband now. I'm good. I'm happy.
That's good. That's good.
But when you said cleanse, I was like, that's what I called it. Oh, that's funny. God. Okay, I'm totally off task now. I love that. I think that's a really cute story, and I mean the premise of it's really cute. What are some of your favorite? We call them tropes. People who read romance didn't really know what that is, but what are some of your favorite types of romance stories?
I definitely like the idea of forced proximity. I think that's a good one when you've got two people who, you know, who kind of are stuck together and something has to happen. I know there's been a lot of talk about this book, and I'll still talk about it, but I just read over the summer The Hating Game by Sally Thorne. And that's probably one of my favorite romances to date. You know, these two people who supposedly hate each other and are stuck in this tiny little office, working basically like right across from each other in this tiny little office, both, you know, assistants to their CEOs who are co-CEOs of a publishing company, but hate each other, and they hate each other too. And it's just, oh, the tension of putting people so close together when they can't be together. That's a really fun one to me. And again, what's adding to that is the whole enemies to lovers aspect. I love people who can't stand each other yet are so attracted to each other.
Yeah, when you're reading it, you're going, oh my gosh, would y'all just do it already?
I know, right? Like, you know they want to. You totally know they want to.
Yes, yes, I know those types. I'm going to put the phone number out. Excuse me. It is 347-633-9609, and there is a prize to be given away tonight to one of the callers, so be sure to call in if you're listening tonight. Don't be scared. We don't bite, I promise. Just call in and say hi, and say hi to AJ Pine, and you could win a prize. Okay, so let's go. Let's talk about what you are working on for the future now that you've finished up book four and leaving Kingston Ale House behind for a little while.
I know, it is. It's sad to say goodbye to these characters. They were a whole lot of fun. I actually have a couple of new things in the works. I have a new series that it won't be coming out until probably January of 2018 is when book one will release. But this is going to be my first in a new series with Grand Central Publishing. And I've got three books, a trilogy coming out of three California cattle rancher brothers who inherit a vineyard.
Whoa.
And
okay.
Yeah. Yeah. totally different stuff than what I've been doing. So yeah, going off and I mean, these are romances, absolutely romances, but a little bit, there's still, I can't write without humor. So there's still humor infused into these, but they're a little bit more, even though my series was an adult series, these are people who are a little bit more, grown up, established in their lives, and have to deal with some weightier issues, I guess you could say, but mm-hmm. definitely the romance, definitely the happily ever after and sexy times and all that. so that's one series coming out. And then I'm actually co-writing a series with one of my good friends, Leah Riley, who is also a contemporary romance author. And we are co-writing a series about, and this is totally unconnected. This is a series with three brothers who are royalty, three prince brothers, and the sort of women who come into their lives. And that's going to be with Harlequin, their new sort of very sexy line, their new very sexy line that's going to be launching soon. And so those are going to be a little bit higher in heat level.
Interesting. I like that.
Than my stuff right now. So yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun.
That, I like that. That one sounds intriguing. so you've got a lot on your plate.
I have a lot of writing to do. Yeah.
Branching out and to try these new, is it scary to try, something different? I mean, you've been writing in the new adult kind of contemporary, and then you kind of take another step over here. Is it really scary?
It is a little bit, only because, this is, so the Kingston Alehouse book was my ninth contemporary romance book that came out. It was my fourth in adult romance. The other five were new adult. So I think readers are used to a certain format from me, I guess, and hoping that those who have liked what I've done so far will sort of branch out with me into this newer stuff. It'll still be me, but it'll just a little bit different me.
Yeah, they tend to follow, though. Once they like your voice, I know I do. I'm like, I'll read everything somebody writes if I like their voice. So, it's all about getting it out there and building the I do get confused when people only write one book in one and then skip to another, and it's kind of like, I can't keep up. But,
what's your brand?
Yeah, right, exactly. But, sometimes that's about finding your voice. Some people have to write several things before they find a niche that they're really comfortable writing. So, and I understand that too, because I'm trying to do the same thing. So I can't really complain. but, yeah, I mean, it sounds to me like and you've got a pretty good background because you're well-read. And, all of us who work with teenagers, we've been forced to read things that maybe we didn't necessarily have to. But, we have more of a, I don't know, what's the, I mean, I have to read a lot of things that I probably wouldn't have read otherwise, just to read them to make sure that, we could add them in our collection.
Right, okay, for your collection and stuff like that.
I do
think that teaches me a lot. That teaches me a lot, too, because I still, one of my very first loves is young adult literature, and that was the first one that I wrote. And I do hope to add that to my repertoire someday. It's just adult romance is my thing right now. But, yeah, I absolutely love YA. And so I do – I read adult romance as well. And so I try to read the kinds of things that I do want to write to understand what is, what is selling, what is touching readers and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think a big part of it is definitely being well read and knowing what's out there and what is kind of hitting the market and stuff like that.
Right. What is maybe a genre or a subject matter that you wouldn't touch? Period. No way.
Not that I have anything against it at all, but historical
really?
Romance. Yeah, and I have nothing against it at all. It's just And maybe it's my experience with history when I was in school, like everything goes back to when you're in school, and it's like high school can either make or break a subject for you. And like history
That's
was
true.
Never my thing. Like, I do a ton of research for everything I write, even if it's contemporary. I research and try and get stuff right for the time period that it's in. But I feel like I am so not well read in, you know, different aspects of history that I would fail miserably if I tried to write a historical romance.
Do you read historical romances?
I don't. I don't pick them up as a go-to or anything like that. Like, if somebody recommends something to me, but no, I've read very, very little, and I feel a little ashamed to admit that. I'm a judge for the RWA, the Rita contest coming
up,
and I did get some historical romances to read in my Rita books. I'm actually really excited to do that because I feel like I need to start building my repertoire, at least as a reader, at least as a reader.
Yeah. It comes up a lot. It's very much reader's preference, and all of our backgrounds are all different. And, you know, that's why your choices are always different. And I know that you probably know this too, that, you know, when you do the reference interview, when you find a book for a kid that, you know, you hope will be one that they can actually sit through and read.
Right.
That it's, you know, all about their personal preference and you digging out these things. Do you like these kind of movies? Do you, you know, what kind of books are, what, do you like comic books? You know, digging it all out and then go, okay, let me make the match up here. So I totally understand when, you know, there are a lot of people who don't like to read historical romances. And then there's those of us who are super nerdy history nerds. You know, seriously, there's like a T-shirt that from the History Channel that says History Nerd or something. I need that because I love anything historical. And I don't know why. It's just something about it. I like to be in another time or something away from right now. Maybe it's the presidency or something coming up. But anyway.
Right, exactly.
Lots,
I know.
Of things. Yeah, I don't know. It's a cool escape for me. But yeah, I understand that. I do. So mine would be science fiction. Never, ever, 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 ever will you see me writing science fiction. So there you go. I don't read it. I don't write it. I'll watch the movies because then I don't have to think about it too much because it's right there in front of me. But I tried so hard to read. I can't even remember who it was, but it was, you know, somebody was like, okay, read this. I mean, even Ray Bradbury was like, what? I'm so lost. I don't even know what's this going on here. So, yeah, no.
I love Ray Bradbury. I don't know if I could write it, but I do like to read it. But it's definitely not my go-to because sci-fi is never a happily ever after.
No, gosh, no. And maybe that's why. Maybe that's why it turns me off so bad, because fantasy can have happily ever after too and be romantic, but sci-fi
right.
never goes there. Star Wars is never happy.
No, it's not. Oh my gosh, don't even get me started on The Force Awakens.
Well, I have had such a blast. I'm so glad. Sorry about all the technical things, but I'm glad we got a chance to talk and talk about library stuff. And let's make sure everybody knows where they can find you online. You've got your website, which is
yes.
ajpine.com, and
yes.
Is all your social media links available through there as well?
All my social media links are on the main page of the website. So, yeah, that's the best place to find me.
And do you have a newsletter?
I do, and that's also, you can also sign up for my newsletter right from my website. So it's also on the main page of my website, so you can find it there as well.
And what kind of stuff, I mean, your newsletter, do you do a monthly newsletter?
I don't do a monthly newsletter, so I'm not going to, like, flood your inbox or anything
okay.
like that. No, it's more, and it's not even a regular, I need to get better at it, basically, is what I'm saying. It's not a regular thing. It's probably more like a quarterly thing when books are coming out or when I have news, stuff like that.
Okay.
So, yes, promise not to flood your inbox.
Good deal. And they can follow you on Facebook and Twitter, and they can follow your Amazon author page. Anywhere else that you're out there, I guess you have a
Instagram.
Yeah,
I have a Pinterest, but I'm not very Pinteresty. So, I mean, you can follow me there, but I don't remember the last time I updated my Pinterest boards.
Okay. And Worth Wait just came out this week.
Yes, came out on Monday. Yes.
And it's available at all the big, or any, really any of the retail
any,
markets.
Any of the, yep, any of the retail sites you can find Worth Wait.
Awesome. And when are you, what are you talking about their next release? Next year?
Next year, yeah, I know. 2017 is a little bit slow right now as far as releases. But it's a different timeline. The Cowboys Run in the Vineyard series is my first print series, so that will be hitting stores in early 2018. So I'm really excited for that.
Awesome. Well, we'll if they sign up for your newsletter, then they can get updates on that as well.
Absolutely, yes.
That'd be the perfect thing. I try to make sure people understand that newsletters are really the best way to hear about your favorite authors because it's direct from the horse's mouth, so to speak. Not to call
you
a horse.
Absolutely.
Well, thanks so much for being on, and good luck with your Rita reading because I'm actually kind of jealous. I'd like to be able to read those too, but enjoy.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me, Tabitha.
And you have a great evening, and I hope the weather stays decent in the middle of the country for the rest
of
the week.
Yeah, it's a little weird here. It's like autumn here right now. I'm not going to complain.
Yeah, I think we're going to have a little bit of spring, and then it's come back to winter. It's very strange.
Yeah.
so you take it easy, and best of luck to you.
Thank you so much. You too.
All right. Have a great one.
All right. And bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And thanks, everybody, for listening in tonight. Sorry about the technical difficulties. As usual, our wonderful studio decides to do what it wants to do. I will be back next Thursday here at 9 p.m. Central. You can find me on Facebook at The Librarian at Authors on the Air. I'm on Twitter as HOT_librarian. And this broadcast has been recorded and will be available as a podcast the Authors on the Air website, SoundCloud, and iTunes, right here on this link where you're listening to it right now. In about 5 minutes, it will also be a podcast. And you can find us online at www.authorsontheair.com. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and anywhere else you can think of. Join us at Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. You have a great evening and sweet dreams.